It is Dukes and Bell. We're having a great time out here meeting some great listeners, man, hanging out at Jimmy's Tequila right here off of Peachtree Industrial. We'll be here until 6. Our friends from Ultra, Michelob Ultra, out here giving you a chance to win tickets to a match at Mercedes-Benz for the World Cup. But real quick, Mike, we want to mention this because O just sent this. O's back at the studio. And he said there's a report out there. And, guys, it's that time of year, okay? We're a couple of weeks away from the draft. I'm talking about the NBA draft. Once the finals is over, that's where the focus will be. And then we'll get a chance to see what's going to happen as we get to July with free agency and all with the Hawks. But there are reports out there that the Hawks may be one of the teams interested, because we've got the cap space to do it.
Right.
In Austin Reeves.
Ooh, that's tasty.
The Lakers have an exclusive negotiating window. And the beginning of free agency begins, I think, June 30th. We'll talk to Brad about this, Brad Botkin, NBA writer for CBS, in just a second. But I just want to put it out there because you guys will hear a variety of things. And O was like, did you guys see this? No. Am I surprised?
How does that make you feel?
Well, look, everybody's saying the Brooklyn's going to offer him potentially 4 years, $178 million. Are you willing to do that for Austin Reeves?
Is Ressler ready to pull that? I mean, that's the thing. I know. I mean, I love Ancy Soleil, but our owners, let's be honest, he's had alligator arms when it comes time to, you know, yes, getting your toes on these aprons we talk about with the cap and the luxury tax.
So check this out, Mike, real quick, and then we'll talk to Brad, who's holding on. Detroit is also apparently interested. Now, if you're Reeves, think about this. Are they closer?
They're ready made. They're ready made.
They're closer.
That's turnkey.
And that's all I'm saying. Yeah. Like, that's the battle for sometimes with these free agents is, okay, we feel like we're a player or two away, but he may look at this and go, Detroit's, they're on the verge. We'll see. Brad, thanks for joining us, man, on Dukes and Bell. We appreciate you jumping on with us. We've been spending a lot of time, as everybody has, on what we saw in that last game. And Mike and I were just saying, do the Spurs need to be on somebody's couch, or are they just that naive that this young group can put what we saw a couple of nights ago behind them and come back strong in game five?
I mean, to me, this team has proved its mettle. We keep talking about that they're young and can they kind of rise to these occasions. And I just think it's too low-hanging a fruit at this point to not treat this team as a steeled, mettled team. I mean, they were down 3-2 to OKC. They go in and win game seven on the road. They're down 2-0 in this series. Everybody said it's done, and they should have won both games in Madison Square Garden. So I think this team has proved itself in terms of its ability to kind of put things behind them, have that amnesia that all of us mortals are not good at doing. We go out and play golf and we double bogey a hole and we can't forget it for the rest of the front nine. These guys are programmed and built to put this stuff behind them and go to the next task at hand. And the Spurs have proven their ability to do that. I think this series is going back to New York.
Ooh, look, it's been nip-tuck in all of these games, and certainly you could argue that the Knicks, we saw it here in Atlanta, did some really dopey stuff, and they did some horrible half-court offense in the loss and the first half of the other win. But the Spurs, and it's been well-documented, Brad, stop shooting threes. Where's the veteran coach, yes, on that staff to tell, hey, knucklehead, stop. Just run your offense. Let's not shoot it with 10 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah, in hindsight, that was, and really, even when it was happening in real time, you know, there was a couple possessions where I think they fired up five threes, in like they kept getting the offensive rebound, and Wemby shot right, two of them, and I think they only got five paint shots in the second half. I mean, their shot diet didn't look good. I always hesitate to say that a team should play the score. I think that's how you lose leads, you know. I know three-point shooting can go hot and cold, but generally speaking, I don't like this protect the lead mentality, stop playing what got you the lead in the first place, like when football teams start running the ball in the second half because they have a 14-point lead, and it just always lets the other team back in it. So I don't want to be too hard on the Spurs, just continuing to shoot, continuing to play fast. That's what got them the lead. And when they slow down and start getting careful, their half-court offense can get pretty jammed up because they don't have good spacing with Castle. Wembanyama's not strong enough to force himself into the paint. When they're playing quicker, he's attacking quicker in transition, early offense, and they're getting into sets before New York can set. That's when they're having success getting Wemby downhill. But yes, in hindsight, I've seen people saying that if Greg Popovich were the coach, he would have gotten the huddle somewhere early in the fourth quarter and said the next person to shoot a three in the next 5 minutes is not playing the rest of the game.
Maybe, right.
You know, maybe something when you started to see the avalanche starting to happen, you know, I think there probably was a moment in time that Mitch Johnson kind of regrets not corralling the group and laying down the law a little bit. Not like encouraging, hey guys, let's run our offense, let's take a little, like, no, if you take a three in the next 5 minutes, you're out for the rest of the game. Like, I don't know if Popovich would have done that. I've just seen people saying that. Maybe that was something that could have been done before the full avalanche started. But, you know, in the end, I'm typically an advocate of continuing to play the way that got you the lead in the first place.
That's how we lost the Super Bowl, by the way, Brad. Again, to your point, I see both sides of it.
Yeah. Brad, it's Brad Bakken, guys, by the way, NBA writer for CBS joining us here on Dukes and Bells. We talk about the NBA Finals. By the way, just a quick note, this Finals has been great, though, hasn't it? I mean, seriously.
Oh, when we talk about
When we talk about where the NBA is and the star power and, like, oh, LeBron and Curry and all these guys on the tail end, and then you watch this Finals, you're like, man, this is exactly what we want as fans.
Boy, it's incredible. I mean, this has got to be the best series I can remember. And there's been better series in terms of you would like for it to be 2-2. So 3-1 sort of sounds lopsided, but like this is anything right. But lopsided. The Spurs have had a 10-point lead in three of these games. They've had the lead with under two
That's
minutes
crazy.
To play in all four of these games. It's remarkable how close this series is. I mean, Jalen Brunson's a leading candidate for MVP, and he's a plus-minus negative in this series. So there is separation between these guys, these teams. I was on TV earlier today, and people were asking me if the Spurs were playing their best basketball, if the Knicks were playing their best basketball. I would say no. We've seen turnovers from the Spurs. We've seen them cough up leads. We've seen Jalen Brunson start getting back into some of his too much dribbling bad habits. But the beauty of this series, as in all of life, is in the imperfections. There's no way either of these teams were going to be perfect against one another. They might be the Knicks look perfect when they're playing the Cavs, when they're playing the 76ers. The Spurs look terrific when they're playing Portland in the first round. Like, these teams are so good and so uniquely constructed to combat the particular advantages that each of them enjoy that it's going to be a fight. And to me, that's the beauty of it. That all these Spurs turnovers that they're taking a hit for, to me, I look at the good side of it. That's Knicks defense. That's guys swarming down off the wing and still recovering to the shooter. Like, competition at this level is supposed to be hard. There's supposed to be human flaw and mistakes because it's difficult. They're so good at the height of their powers on the biggest stage. Embrace the mistakes that are happening because this is a fight.
But do they need that OG? I mean, we're talking with Brad Bakken, guys from CBS Sports here, on the Sweet James Accident Attorney Hotline. Do they need, like, we joked around about it, you can't have Draymond, but that kind of toughness, that kind of guy to be a protector, like in hockey, for a guy like Wemby, so Wemby doesn't have to throw the elbows himself. Do they need that presence? Is that part of the problem they've had, like, in the last loss?
Who, the Spurs?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't, like, if you're asking, do they need a hockey enforcer? No, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, they're, to me, collectively, they're like a tough-as-nails team. Castle's tough as hell. Dylan Harper's got to be the toughest 20-year-old I've ever seen in my life.
Let me rephrase it. Let me rephrase it. Do they need, like, a veteran? Like, a veteran, a more veterans than De'Aaron Fox?
Well, everyone was sort of hoping Fox was that guy. And I won't say that he's not. I'll just say that, you know, in the end, I'll take the talent. If you're asking me if I'd rather have, you know, like Kelly Olynyk or something playing just for like the presence over the talent of Sean Penny and Vassell, and I wouldn't. I think the talent has won out. I can't speak to the sort of intangible benefits of veteran leadership in the locker room and how you can quantify that and why the Miami Heat kept paying Udonis Haslem when he never played. I don't know. Everybody believes something different. To me, we've been praising the Spurs for being ahead of their maturation timeline all playoffs. Like, they play older and wiser and in a more veteran sense than their years would suggest. So now I think it's low-hanging fruit when they run into an incredible team. Suddenly now they're they're immature and they need a veteran leader. Like, we weren't saying that when they went on the road and beat OKC in game seven. We were saying they played like 10-year vets. So I don't.
But when Wemby misses his free throws, now the poise thing comes in. The moment got big.
Sure, I mean, that's poise, but you can't put a veteran in just to shoot the free throws.
No,
I mean,
true.
That's part of playing basketball. Yeah, that's a moment where, you know, when that comeback was happening, we've seen this all, you know, any of us have watched the NBA for long enough. You know that, like, teams are down 25, and there's a natural ebb and flow to the game, and they get it back to six, and they just kind of never get over the hump. You know, something happens, and I thought that moment was when Josh Hart missed the layup, and yeah. Wemby went to the line on the ensuing possession. It's like, okay, that's how it usually goes. The team gets close, and then one thing goes wrong because it can't keep rolling downhill, and you kind of survive. And I thought the Spurs were going to survive if Wemby made those free throws. And, yeah, that was – I hate to use the word choke because I've never stood on the free throw line in Game 4 in Madison Square Garden of the Finals at 22 years old. So I know, but I know missing those free throws was a big, big deal.
It was. What do you anticipate? You said it's going back to the Garden, and you think we're going to get at least six games, maybe seven?
I don't know if they can win it at the Garden, but I go back to the leads they've had in every game. Like, clearly they can beat the Knicks home or away. The bottom line is we get too caught up. This is how stock markets crash. This is how everybody goes to the casino and never walks out with their money. They win the first eight hands, and then we always think that what is currently happening is just going to continue to happen. And now on every show I'm on today, the Knicks won the last game, the Spurs melted down, it's over. Like, that's just going to happen again. It doesn't keep happening. The Knicks cannot keep getting into these early game deficits and thinking that they're just going to continue to pull them out in the end. You can't be at 10-point deficits in three of the four games. They're turning over six-card blackjacks right now. You know, you don't want to be in that position, and that's how you lose the money back that you were lucky to win in the first place.
That's a good point. Brad, before we let you go, Brad Bogdan, guys from CBS Sports, talking NBA. 60 seconds. What do you do for the Hawks in the offseason? I mean, keep Kuminga? Do we keep McCollum? What do we do in free agency? What do we do for trades?
I would keep Kuminga. I'm a California guy, and I watch every Warriors game, and I think Kuminga's really good. And you certainly saw it in spurts for you in this playoff run. The tough thing about the Hawks, you know, you remember in 21 when you had all that success and you got to the conference finals, and then you thought, we're okay. We don't need to do anything the next. And you sort of ran it back with Collins and everything. And I think that was a missed opportunity there.
Yep.
I think this would be a missed opportunity to not, you know, C.J. McCollum was great. It was obviously fantastic in the playoffs in the early part of the Knicks series. But I hear you talking about a guy like Austin Reeves before I came on. Something I think to invigorate a second scorer alongside Jalen Johnson. I don't know that you're going to go to the highest level with Nikhil Alexander-Walker being such a primary scorer for you. I think certainly you've got to look at a move that puts you into the category where you can compete from a firepower standpoint. I like the versatility. They've created a great makeup with Daniels and Alexander Walker and Jalen Johnson, and they put together a versatile two-way sort of in the Knicks-Celtics blueprint. Everybody can shoot, pass, and dribble. And Travis Schlenk wanted that when he was there. I remember talking to him on multiple occasions about, you know, coming from that Warriors background of his, and it was like, everyone shoot, pass, and dribble. And they've created that. They've created a versatile defense, a Kongwu. He's out shooting now. I think they've established the foundation of a versatile two-way team, and they got some continuity now with re-signing Snyder. I think they to take the next step, and Detroit is in the same place, I think they've got to find themselves. I don't think Jalen Johnson can be the 1A scorer on a team that you expect to go to the conference finals. I think he's, at this point, is a phenomenal all-around player, an all-NBA-level player. But to me, he feels like an OG Anunoby to me, like a great two-way player, like honestly, awesome. But Jalen Brunson is why they're in the finals.
That's right.
And I think
it's
you're looking for that guy.
It's a great point. Brett, we couldn't have said it better. I think that's how we feel on this show. We've tried to express that. We'll see what the Hawks do, man. Great job on covering the NBA and covering the finals. We'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks for stopping by.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, man, good stuff from him, Brad Botkin. I don't think, and that's a discussion we'll have in a few weeks when the final's done and how this team is going to approach free agency. We're coming back, guys. Dog Report's on the way. Mike's got some guy talk, and we're going to talk to Steve Coonan as well.
By the way, there's probably guys in the cars going, yeah, you had that guy, Trae Young.
Well, look, here's my question, though. If you had Trae, would it have stumped the development of Jalen Johnson?
Yes, two things can be true.
And that's what I think they thought. All right, we're coming back. It's Dukes and Bell.